All right, this is the Magical Hour. We'll take your phone calls with Stuart Rhodes as we talk about the coronavirus, what it's done to our rights, what it's done to the Constitution. Your calls are next on Coast to Coast AM. And welcome back to Coast, George Norrie with you, Stuart Rhodes with us, of course, and as we are talking about, I guess, our constitutional rights, and Stuart, in the long run, are we going to lose these rights, or are we going to stay strong?
No, I think we're going to stay strong. There's already a backlash happening. This is what's kind of interesting, is that, you know, of course, people tend to go along with something when they're scared sufficiently. But then there's a backlash. Like, they realize we were played after 9/11. We realize, you know, in this case, we're also being played. And so you're seeing people pushing back who might otherwise have not been politically active. Or now, like, look at Shelley Luther, for example, a salon owner. Did she ever think she'd be, you know, held, arrested and put in jail for taking a stand on constitutional rights as a salon owner? Probably not. So we have one of our members who's a tattoo parlor up in upstate New York, who's going to be opening up on the 30th in defiance of Governor Cuomo. And so same thing there, when a tattoo owner, you know, a tattoo parlor owner would think he's going to be standing up for the Bill of Rights. That's kind of where we're at.
What's going to be something, though, is with a mandatory push for vaccines, what are they going to do to people who say no?
A good question. And quite a few people are going to say no, frankly, with their rifle in their hand. So they're just not going to do it. I think the legitimacy of this and the credibility of the government officials has been deteriorated to such a degree that there's millions of Americans who just will refuse to comply. You're going to get mass civil disobedience, mass defiance, and in the end, you might even get some violence.
Probably. Let's get some calls. Tom in La Jolla, California, welcome to the program. Hi, Tom.
Hi, George. Thank you for accepting my call. And Stuart, a couple of quick comments and a question. Stuart, you know, we look at the founding writers of the Constitution, and you remind me of Thomas Paine. And for me, that is high praise. You don't remind me of plutocrat human traffickers like Washington and Jefferson, or like central banking proponents like Hamilton. But you remind me of the essayist on liberty, Thomas Paine, and his essays on liberty. And I see that distinction. The other comment I'd like to make is, it's sort of amazing to me that the Bill of Rights are amendments. They're amendments. They were not included in the original Constitution, you know, because of plutocrat human traffickers like Washington and Jefferson and central banking proponents like Hamilton. You know, there was pushback by the average man, the average woman, back in the 1790s, to bring about those rights, the right to assemble, the right to not incriminate yourself, the right to bear arms, etc. And these became amendments. And so that brings me to my question, which is, you know, as Thomas Paine says, you know, that liberty, you have to get out and fight for that. And so, well, I'm not talking about fighting, but I'm talking about what, in your opinion, is effective assembly, effective protest to stand up for rights. I don't want to be, you know, thrown in jail for 10 years under the Patriot Act, you know, some dark hole type of thing. I want to be able to effectively protest and assemble. And I was wondering if you would comment on that along the lines of liberty as promoted by Thomas Paine.
Well, I would say it requires you to be willing to go to jail, like Shelley Luther was, or Henry David Thoreau was, when he was protesting against the war of Mexico. A friend went to visit him in jail and said, "What are you doing in there?" And he replied and said, "What are you doing out there? The place for a man of principle in this situation is in here." That was his response. So it requires civil disobedience, and that at the first threshold of that is that you're going to go to jail to make your point. And I think the mass civil disobedience, like you saw with the surfers down in Huntington Beach, you know, they're ignoring the governor. And you're seeing the same thing in Virginia. Despite the governor's decrees, you know, thousands of people are now flooding back to the beaches because they know it's a bunch of nonsense. That they know that the sun and the surf is the best thing you can do if you're trying to fight a virus that dies in the sun. Go out in the sun. And so that kind of mass civil disobedience, I think, is the answer. And then it also requires you to reach out to your local police and say, and your local officials, your town councilmen, your county commissioners, every single one of them took that oath. And the founders, you know, to their credit, they put that link in every chain. The chain of command goes through, and everybody has a responsibility to say no. It only takes one to break the link. The police officer on the street, whether it's the police chief, whether it's the mayor, the governor, the judge, any of these people, all of them have responsibility to say no. It only takes one to stop the chain.
Absolutely. Next up, we go to Renee in Alabama. Welcome to the program. Hi, Renee. Go ahead.
Hey. Okay. So we locked down till April 15th, and that was to flatten the curve and the PPE and ready the hospitals and everything, not to totally stop a virus. Okay. And I, for one, and then we were told to wait till the 30th. Okay. I, for one, was waiting on the 30th for the president to stop the lockdown. Instead, President Trump empowered the governors. Was that legal for him to do that? And is that not why we're in the mess that we're in? And what do we do about it?
Well, go ahead.
So here's what happened. Just to be blunt, Trump has kind of played it both ways. He said, I'm not ordering anybody to do anything. I'm not trying to lock down the country, which is good because he has no authority whatsoever to do that. But he did say, through the DHS guidelines, well, you governors can go ahead and use this criteria, which they did. So you're right. Like I said before, it's in his lap. He should rescind those guidelines, those DHS guidelines that are being used by the governors to abuse your rights. So he is responsible. Him and his team ultimately are responsible for that. But the governors are also responsible, too. So yes, I think Trump should rescind the guidelines because now he's playing both sides. He's saying, oh, you know, open up, and he's like, you know, free Michigan and free Virginia. Well, they're only following the guidelines he put in place. He needs to do the right thing and say this was going too far. That's not what I meant, or, you know, that was a mistake, and I'm going to rescind them because it is not lawful. They took the preservation of critical functions during emergencies, a government commitment that we're going to help keep these things open, and turn it on its head to turn into, well, unless you're one of these things, we can shut you down, including protests. So including your you know, core individual rights protected by the Bill of Rights are trying to determine that this is no longer essential. And that's just draconian nonsense.
And, you know, Stuart, I got to say that until we get close to the election, if the economy is picking up steam, I think he's got good chances to get reelected. If the economy is in the tank by November election time, he's going to have trouble getting elected, no matter who the candidate is who runs against him. What do you think?
Oh, agreed. And in fact, in some ways, he's kind of handed his enemies a loaded pistol. He's given them the rationale now to keep this country in a depression until the election, and also to keep it in a state of emergency, which will, you know, require, you know, mail-in ballots and electronic voting and all these things. And going back to the deep state, I don't trust them to have fair elections. I don't care whether you're a liberal or Democrat or Republican. You have to be concerned about setting aside the normal process for elections for some kind of emergency procedure that's easy to manipulate. And so I think that's what you're going to wind up with if you do that, is whichever way the election goes, that either half of the American people who voted for the other person is not going to trust the outcome. We're going to have a delegitimization of our electoral process. I think it's very dangerous. So I think that we're heading towards a perfect storm of a lack of legitimacy of the government in the eyes of the American people.
Other countries seem to be up in arms about this, too. They're affected by it, some more than others. What do you think is going to happen worldwide, too, Stuart?
Well, the same backlash. And, in fact, what's kind of weird about this situation, kind of going back to who benefits, you had the Hong Kong uprisings, you had people in France standing up, you're seeing this populist wave across the world. You had in Virginia, I was down there for a month helping train militias. We had, you know, 600 men standing there with rifles opposing Governor Northam. And then all of a sudden, here comes this virus, makes everyone afraid to be out in the streets. That was kind of interesting, too. So, but I think you're going to see a worldwide backlash. They're realizing, I mean, Sweden's this huge, blinding example of a country that did none of this stuff, and their death rate is no different than their neighbors. And yet they didn't do any of this. And then South Dakota is a good example here in the United States. So looking at that and going, wait a minute. If Sweden didn't lock down at all and didn't do any of this, you're telling us that we have no choice to keep doing this until you have a vaccine. This doesn't make any sense. And so why are you doing this? And the obvious answer is control.
Well, and I'm glad you mentioned the Hong Kong protests. I mean, unprecedented that we would get those kinds of protests against the Chinese Communist government. But we did. But you know what? It's now just gone away. Since this COVID-19 popped up, the protesters, they're gone.
And now look at the result. They're dragging away the pro-democracy legislators, dragging them out of their parliament and taking over by de facto.
Let's go next to Cornelius in Louisiana. Hello there, sir. Welcome to the program.
Hello there, George and Stuart. God bless both of y'all and stuff, and I salute your service. Stuart, I was a military police officer in Anniston, Alabama, where they had the chem school and the military police school, and George generally knows my story. Stuart, I appreciate what you're doing for us and stuff, but like I was telling Tommy, I'm the God, guns, and gold man, the Bible, bullets, and beans man. Everything's in the Bible, and it's going the way the Bible's going. But you're right, Stuart, we need to stand up. But that lady was wrong about Trump. That's that false face Fauci. Dr. Fauci is a liar and stuff. And the Chinese communists and him, along with the Democrats, President Obama, they've all planned this stuff just like they did General Flynn in. They're doing the whole country in. And you're right about the mom and pop stores. They're trying to get rid of all the Trump supporters. We'll keep them locked down, but we'll keep Walmarts and the Targets, all these big box stores open and keep Big Pharma going. So it's not Trump's fault about this whole thing. He just gave people a choice of what to do. And Stuart, we need to stand up now while we can, or else we're just going to go down in flames. So God bless you, Stuart, and the Oath Keepers.
And that's the mood of a lot of people in the country, Stu.
Well, let's make things very clear. I'm a Trump supporter. But I think he certainly got played by Fauci, and he's been led by the nose into this disaster. But in the end, he's still the commander-in-chief. He's still the president of the United States. The buck stops with him. So he has a duty now.
That's right.
To rescind that order and say, hey, or the guidelines and say, hey, here's how I open up America. I rescind those guidelines. The governors have gone too far. Let's, and lead by example and stand up and say, there will be no forced vaccinations. We're not going to track the American people. We're not going to chip you or whatever they plan on doing. No biometrics tracking that they want to put on us. And he needs to say Sweden's correct. That's the way to go. And he needs to lead that in that way. Because otherwise, if he doesn't, Fauci is going to continue to do what he's been doing and lead us towards his pharmaceutical buddies making trillions of dollars that will also line his pockets too.
Why is Fauci still there? Why hasn't he been let go?
Good question. Well, I mean, here's the thing. Trump has from the very beginning, much like with Reagan, they surrounded him with deep staters. And I'm talking about like the CIA. They surrounded him with deep staters, and their goal and job is to contain him and to run the clock out. I mean, the same thing is true in any outsider. You know, they did the same thing to Kennedy. They tried to, and then they had to kill him because he wouldn't go along. They tried to steer him into what, the Bay of Pigs and everything that they wanted. But he wouldn't go along, and so they wound up killing him. Or look at Operation Northwoods, the proposal by the Joint Chiefs of Staff to President Kennedy to create false flag attacks on American citizens, blame it on the Cuban government to have a war with Cuba, with Castro. He said no to that plan. He was dead the next year.
Yeah.
So this is the situation we're in. That's why I keep bringing up that deep state, the shadow government that killed Kennedy. That's who's still in charge.
And I'm convinced, though, that this was created in that Wuhan lab. To me, it's just too ironic that we would have a viral lab there that we financed, by the way, to the tune of $3.7 million, and then all of a sudden we'd have this outbreak in Wuhan. No. There's too much there.
I agree. I think it was man-made, which is why we took it very seriously at the outset. Because my concern was, this is a very real and very dangerous biological weapon. But then now, of course, it's been used to lock down our freedom either way. But now it's pretty obvious now it's been overblown.
Next up, let's go to Sharon in Crane, Missouri. Welcome to the program. Hi, Sharon.
Hello, George, and hello, Stuart. And I appreciate greatly all the work that both of you are doing. I'm 72 years old. I do not take the flu vaccines. Because the last time I took one, I was so sick, I really thought that I was going to end up in the hospital. And that was about 10 years ago. There's something that no one is seeing, and I'm going to put this out there, and everybody's going to think this woman's crazy. She's old. We are the vulnerable population. At some point down the road, if we do not stand up now and assert ourselves and demand our liberties and stand up for them, there will come a time when people who are of a certain age will be labeled as a vulnerable population and also a danger to the majority of the population. You will have people isolated for their own good, and eventually you will have mandatory euthanasia at a certain age.
Well, that would be horrible, but you know what? You might be right, Sharon. That could happen too. You know,
well, it happened in Nazi Germany.
It did, absolutely.
Yeah, they were considered non-essential. You know, I'm not laughing at what happened in Nazi Germany. I'm laughing at the whole non-essential label. But that's kind of where this leads, essentially. You know, are you essential or not?
Your members with Oath Keepers, what do they say? Do they agree with you? I assume they do.
Yeah, almost overwhelmingly. Our first line is it constitutional or not? You know, like when I worked for Ron Paul, he used to drive other congressmen crazy, and the law is crazy because of this threshold question, is it constitutional? If the answer is no, then I don't care what you think is a good idea, we can't do it. And that's our line. But something I want to raise to people also is there's just two horrible precedents in the United States of medical, not medical malpractice, but medical officials using their power to harm people. You know, of course, the Tuskegee experiments where men were given syphilis intentionally and not given the cure and given a placebo to study the effects of syphilis. You know, they did it to the poor blacks in the South. That's, of course, now well known. But there was also a situation in school in 1949 in an orphanage where you had orphans that were given nuclear isotopes in the Thornall School, state school in Massachusetts. And they gave these kids, it was MIT doing it, along with Quaker Oats, ironically, to give these kids nuclear isotopes and study what happened to them as part of an experiment. So they, you know, picked the most vulnerable people in society and they just, you know, willfully experimented on them.
Well, and by experimenting on them without their approval, too, wasn't it?
Well, yeah. The kids had no idea. They just putting it in the milk and putting it in the oatmeal and being these kids' nuclear isotopes.
Jeez, it's crazy. Stuart, we're going to come back and take final calls with you in a moment on Coast to Coast AM. And welcome back to Coast to Coast. We're going to come back in a moment with Stuart Rhodes and take final phone calls as we talk about COVID-19 and what it's doing or trying to do to our Constitution. Fight back, folks. Fight back. In a nonviolent way, of course. Our scheduled guest for next hour, Dr. Jack Hunter, has just taken ill and just had to cancel. And the show must go on. So we're going to have sound off open lines for the next couple hours right after our interview with Stuart Rhodes. So get ready for that. Sound off open lines beginning next hour here on Coast to Coast AM. And welcome back to Coast to Coast. George Norrie back with you, along with Stuart Rhodes, as we talk about COVID-19 and its effect on the Constitution and all of us. As we try to defeat this shadow government, Stuart, are you seeing signs that they're cracking or not?
Well, I think the legitimacy of the shadow government is being called into question. Well, first of all, people realize it exists. I think the Kennedy assassination now is you know, it's the beginning point for the Red Pill. But when I talk to people, I say, well, go look at Operation Northwood. It's a real document. You can find it online where they proposed, you know, false flag attacks. Then go look at the Gulf of Tonkin, you know, and you can keep on going and look at the CIA running drugs and being in bed with you know, the cartels and the Colombian drug dealers and all of that. And you go back and look at Noriega. Like, Noriega was one of our buddies until he
was an asset until he screwed up, right?
Well, until he decided he got a big head, decided he can do his own thing. Same goes for Saddam Hussein. Same exact thing. We sold him weapons of mass destruction that he used on the Kurds. And then all of a sudden, he's a bad guy because he wasn't doing what we told him to do.
We used him to fight the Iranians.
Right, exactly. And so this is kind of like, this is the sordid history. And then you can look at what's happened in the Middle East since the war on terror began. You know, you have this massive destabilization of the entire Middle East. And once again, who benefits? You know, but what came out of that? And then you look at Benghazi and look at the running of weapons that was going on there. Yeah. So the backdrop to all of this is that the CIA has had obviously continued the same thing that J. Edgar Hoover was doing. He had files on everyone. That's why J. Edgar Hoover was in power for life, because no one dared to try to get rid of him because he had files on everybody. Then you go back to COINTEL, right? Operations in the United States against political dissidents run by the FBI. That's all public knowledge now.
Yeah, absolutely.
It was done to Martin Luther King to discredit him and try to get him to commit suicide. You know, disclosing his affairs, all that stuff was done to destroy him. This is all well known. Everyone knows this now. They should know this. And like, you're going to have a guest on tomorrow night. It's awesome. You know, the Stanford Prison Experiments, but also the Milgram Shock Experiments showing the obedience towards authority. All of this stuff is the backdrop for people that can look and see now, because the internet is free speech. They can look and see all this sordid history. So my message to them is that, okay, look under the lid, look under the rock, and see what's really going on. And I applaud Robert Kennedy Jr. for the work he has done to expose Bill Gates, to expose Fauci, and others like him. But it's really nice to see someone from the political left, who I agree with completely, exposing this iron triangle of massive corporations and illicit wealth who benefit from government regulations. And it's this revolving door of unaccountable, unelected bureaucrats lining the pockets of unaccountable executives in charge of these massive corporations who can make money off of you. Even if they kill you, they make money, and there's no accountability.
Though you and I believe this was concocted in a laboratory, and I believe it was an accidental release, the bottom line is, why in God's name are we funding a lab to play around with coronaviruses? What are we trying to do here?
Well, there's labs like that all over the country. And, you know, this is the problem, is all of these labs that are supposed to be, you know, benefiting mankind are right in bed with that same military-industrial complex that is working on pathogens, intentionally created, you know, deadly viruses to kill people. And they're neck deep in this. And so it's kind of hard to say where one begins and the other one ends. It's almost all dual-use science, right? It's supposed to be to benefit mankind, but it could also be used to kill mankind. And they're working on, like, genetically targeted viruses that only kill some people of a certain race.
Well, and why didn't Fauci, on the first night we all saw him standing with the president, why didn't he say, oh, by the way, I have to tell you this, full disclosure, we as a government gave $3.7 million to the Wuhan viral lab to play around with coronaviruses. We're sorry, but we did that. Why doesn't he come clean on that?
Well, because it'll destroy his credibility. He's not going to, you know, he's going to rely on people not knowing or not enough knowing, and he's going to rely on the partisanship also. This is what's also done to us, is divide and conquer. You know, they pit us against each other. In the end, all of us should be upset by this situation, this kind of corruption that's going on. And Fauci's, he made millions of dollars on patents. He owns a lot of patents on a lot of these drugs that he's pushing. I mean, look at the HIV epidemic. He's notorious in the HIV community for suppressing knowledge and use of alternate treatments and only pushing things that he had a vested interest in, or their friends had a vested interest in.
Unbelievable. Let's go to the final phone calls. We go to Richie in West Virginia to get us going here. Hi, Rich. Go ahead.
Hey, good morning, gentlemen. Thanks, George, for taking my call. It's been a while since I talked to you since January, and I gave my 2020 predictions.
Oh, that's right. It's been a long. Yeah. It's been many months.
Yeah, so far they've all came true. I was hoping I'd be wrong.
Sadly, you're right.
Yeah. But, Stuart, I'm a former Marine myself in the United States Marine Corps, And I understand exactly everything that you're talking about because you're exactly 100% right, you know. But this whole thing's been a coup for a very long time. I mean, we've seen it where Barack Obama, President Obama, was introduced the health care reform where everybody was is kind of forced, whether you can afford it or not, on having health insurance, and it's kind of lead up to this point. And we know about Fauci holding some patents on some vaccines, and Bill Gates then jumped onto that bandwagon as well. But my question to you is, if things keep going the way they do, and history kind of repeats itself, I was wondering, do you think that we could be kind of slowly hitting towards another form of the Dark Ages, like what happened to the Roman Empire? Because it had to been the Dark Ages that tore them down, but it was Christianity later on that brought them together. From the French king, self-proclaimed French king under the church. But I was wondering if you kind of feel that we could be kind of headed towards another Dark Ages.
Well, I think we're heading towards is unfortunately a combination of Orwell's 1984 and Brave New World. That's where we're headed. And so we have to push back.
And the movie Contagion, throw that in there too, huh?
Right. Well, so it's not going to be a breakdown, a fragmentation, so much as it's going to be this consolidation. So that's what I think is going to happen if we don't stop it. So there is a chance that this country could fragment. You know, God forbid there's a civil war, and it could fragment. But then I think what will happen then is you would have a country like China, who would rush in to fill the vacuum. You know, they want this land. Don't make no mistake about it. I think the Chinese they want the, you know, what the Nazis referred to as Lebensraum. You know, they want the room, living room. They want the territory. So that's why they have their tentacles in Africa, South America, Central America, Mexico, and in the United States. And you know, back to my point, I think a lot of the politicians in the United States are now owned by the Chinese, frankly.
Yeah, I think you're right too, Stuart. I mean, you were in the Army. Richie was in the Marine Corps. I was in the Navy. We love this country. It's the best country on the planet in spite of the things that have been going on. And to me, isn't that remarkable? It continues to stay strong. And up until this virus, the economy was pretty robust. People were working. People were making this country. And again, in spite of those people within it who are trying to take advantage of certain things, what a powerful country we are, aren't we?
And it's based on our people. I mean, the American people are
exactly
fundamentally strong and believe in freedom.
Let's go to Mary in New Jersey. Hello, Mayor. Go ahead.
Hello, everybody.
Hi.
Since all this started, this picture in my head keeps flashing of Khrushchev pounding on the table. I think it was a shoe.
It was a shoe, and he said, "We will bury you.
We'll destroy you from within." I think that's what he said. We'll destroy you from within.
And he said, "We will bury you." That was his quote.
He said that also. We'll bury you.
That one I remember.
Well, he's going to have a lot to do. So, but like some people don't like babies. Some people don't like the elderly. Some people don't like animals. It's like, who or what do they like besides money? Who or what do they like?
They love money, Mary, and that's part of the problem. And as Stuart had said, it's power. It's power, because once you have everything else you need, power is the next aphrodisiac. That's the next high, and that's what they shoot for. And
exactly,
they're relentless.
The God complex. I think Bill Gates has succumbed to that. He's has all the money he could ever use for anything he could want. So now, what's there to live for? I think he wants to be God, wants to play God.
See, could he be a good guy who's grossly misinformed, that somehow along the line somebody told him vaccines are the way to do it, and he plows his money into it, not necessarily wanting to make billions back, because he's got billions now, but that he really thinks he's doing the right thing?
No, I don't think so.
I mean, you don't?
First of all, he owns a lot of the companies that will be manufacturing the vaccines, so he's going to make even more money. And that's the thing, is people like that are insatiable. Whether it's, you know, George Soros or Bill Gates, they're just insatiable. They can never fill that hole in their heart.
God help all of us when it comes to that, Stuart. I hope I never make that kind of money.
Exactly.
Let's go next to Tom in Riverside, California. Hello, Thomas. Go ahead.
Hello, George and Stuart.
Hi there.
I'm glad to talk with you both. But Stuart, I wanted to ask you a question. You've been around for a while now in your organization, and there's a lot of other organizations that have been around, Richard Gage, and 9/11 Truth, and NRA. Why don't you all just have a conference and get together and try to, you have a good man in there right now for this, Trump, to confront this. I mean, he's really putting himself out on the line here. He could get a bullet in the head easily enough if he pushes in the wrong way.
Well, I tell you what, let's move on. And in terms of you getting together with other organizations, Stuart, I think you do that now anyway, don't you?
We have. In fact, we were at a conference in Houston not too long ago with a bunch of different people in leadership. In fact, Jared Griffin was on. I think he just had him recently on your show. He was there with
Yeah, he was a good guy.
And it comes down to individual liberty versus totalitarian collectivism. And that's what he said at the conference, and he's absolutely correct. One thing I will say is what President Trump should do and do right now is he should declassify all of the secret files that are held by the CIA and the NSA and the FBI that have nothing to do with national security, but everything to do with blackmailing and controlling politicians or protecting their favored politicians who are part of the deep state. Trump has the authority as commander-in-chief and as the president of the United States to do that. He can do it right now.
Tell me more about the protests that are underway around the country with the lockdown that's still occurring in some places.
Well, there's protests all over the country, and there are grassroots. And what I'm seeing is that they are, in many cases, in spite of the Republican Party, a lot of these places, the Republican Party has gone along with this stuff. For example, here in Texas, or even in a Democrat-controlled state, they're mute and quiet and don't say anything. But what we're also seeing at these protests is it's not really about partisan left or right. It's just, average business owners, average citizens saying, hey, it's just getting ridiculous. It makes zero sense for me to be able to go to Walmart, and walk among hundreds of people or thousands of people and touch stuff that, thousands of other people have touched, but I can't open my own small, my own small shop. It makes no sense at all. And so we're seeing that rebellion. So I think we're seeing that, like I said, among the surfers and whatnot in California, but otherwise have voted very left. But now they're like, hey, wait a minute. This governor who's a Democrat is stepping too far. And here in Texas, we're seeing rebellion among the rank and file Republicans against their own governor.
What are they all afraid about, Stu? Why don't they just simply say, we're opening up, we're going right back to what we were? If you're elderly or you have prior sickly conditions, please stay home or get out of harm's way. But for the rest of this planet, we're going to open up again. I want business as usual. Why can't most of them say that?
Well, I mean, some people are really believing, that they've been conditioned to think this is the only way. They're not being told about Sweden. They're not being told about South Dakota. Not being told about the concept of herd immunity and just sheltering the weak, so they've been given this false choice. But I think among the politicians, it's their time to, to shine and play, the resolute leader in a crisis. I think they're all getting off on it. Like a lot of them are enjoying the limelight and the feeling of importance that, hey, I get to be important now in the middle of a crisis. I think a lot of them are running for president. Cuomo's running for president. Abbott's running for president. The Michigan governor is now being tapped as a possible
VP running mate. Absolutely. I mean, we're going to watch all this unfold, but we're going to do it all together. Stuart, thanks. Stay in touch with us. Up next, that's right, Sound Off Open Lines.